From NPR, it's Latino USA.
With Ultima, he begins to experience something different. And he begins to see beauty where there was no beauty. He begins to ask questions about life and death and about good and evil.
That's author Rudolfo Anaya talking about his critically acclaimed book, Bless Me, Ultima. For decades, this book has been read by thousands of students of all ages. That is, unless you're in Arizona.
I've been censored many times, and my answer has always been, the community itself must realize that a few cannot censor books, that that's not right, and they will rise up against the censorship.
Today, a conversation with Rudolfo Anaya about the past, present, and future of Chicano literature in an era of banned books. I'm Maria Hinojosa, and that's coming up on Latino USA. But first, this news. In Texas, the population has grown by close to 4.5 million people over the last decade. Latinos account for 65% of that growth. You might expect the new district maps would reflect that demographic shift, but they don't. That's because last year, a Republican-controlled state legislature redrew the district maps as mandated by the U.S. Constitution after each census. But those proposed boundaries were challenged and then rejected in court. And that includes the latest mapping presented to the courts on February 6th. All of this confusion leaves the Texas Republican primary completely up in the air. To talk about this, we're joined by Nina Perales. She's vice president of litigation at the Mexican American Legal Defense and Education Fund, and she's lead counsel for the Texas Latino Redistricting Task Force that's spearheading the redistricting challenges. And Nina, welcome to Latino USA. You're speaking to us from San Antonio.
Thank you for having me.
All right, so give us a little bit of background on what has happened up until this point. And is it essentially that the proposed districts do not give Latino voters equal representation?
That is the heart of the lawsuit. The demographics of Texas are changing. Latinos are now 38% of our state's population. Unfortunately, after the 2010 census was released, the legislature's maps did not embrace the Latino growth. In fact, the maps and the district lines really kind of sliced and diced the community in a way that meant that we did not get additional electoral opportunities. There were no additional Latino majority districts in which Latinos could choose the candidate who would win the election.
This term gerrymandering that we've heard used over the decades, it's happening right now in Texas.
Yes. In one map, which was the map for our Texas House of Representatives, the state's new lines reduced the number by two districts in which we could elect our preferred candidate. On Congress, the state's new boundaries left us with the same number of Latino opportunity districts that we had in the previous decade and the decade before that, because Texas has not added a new Latino majority district since 1991. And so despite two decades worth of very significant growth, Latinos under the Texas legislature's enacted maps were not going to make any progress.
Are there maps that do in fact create Latino majority districts? Is this going to have to end up at the Supreme Court?
We have a case here in Texas in federal court. We also have litigation in Washington, D.C. And then we also have this appeal that recently occurred to the U.S. Supreme Court, where the U.S. Supreme Court provided additional guidelines for drawing the new maps in Texas. And so as we're moving forward, it's really the task of the court here in Texas to try to find a set of maps that are fair and that deal with any kind of legal problems. We have come to an agreement with the state on a set of maps that do increase the number of Latino majority districts in both the state house, and that will be an addition of two seats, and also the Congress, that will be an addition of two congressional seats. And if the court looks at that proposal and agrees with it and thinks it's right, then hopefully it will be ordered into effect.
At the core, when you're in the court and you're arguing these cases, because you're the head litigator on this, the challenge and the redistricting issue, what is this really about?
What redistricting is really about is giving voters, in this case, Latino voters, the opportunity to have their voice heard. The most compelling witnesses that we have come from around the state. They come from different Latino communities, and they come to court and explain why it's so important to have additional representation for their areas. We've had people come from the colonias along the Texas-Mexico border to explain how tremendously important it would be to have one more person in our state legislature in Austin advocating for paving the streets and getting infrastructure improvements. From our perspective, redistricting is about every aspect of the quality of life and about the political strength of Latinos, because we can change our situation if we have good representation.
Thanks, Nina.
Thank you very much.
Nina Perales is Vice President of Litigation at the Mexican American Legal Defense and Education Fund and lead counsel for the Texas Latino Redistricting Task Force. She spoke to us from San Antonio. For news updates throughout the week, visit us at latinousa.org or follow us on Twitter. We are LatinoUSA, all one word. And we're back in 30 seconds, so stay with us. It's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Recently, hundreds of high school students in Tucson, Arizona, staged classroom walkouts after the school district there canceled its Mexican American Studies programs. This grassroots movement is holding their own teach-ins on banned books and culture. Bless Mi Ultima, the highly acclaimed 1972 coming-of-age novel, is on that list of banned books. It was written by Rudolfo Anaya, who's often referred to as the godfather of Chicano literature. Rudolfo, who has written dozens of books and received numerous national awards and honors over the years, has a new book out, Randy Lopez Goes Home. He joins us now from Albuquerque, New Mexico, to talk about his latest novel and the Arizona controversy that ended up with his books being banned. Rudolfo, thank you so much for joining us on Latino USA. It's really a pleasure to have you on our program.
It's my privilege and honor. Thank you.
When you first realized that your book, Bless Mi Ultima, this classic, is on the list of books that are banned in Arizona, what did you think, Rudolfo, when you heard that?
The interesting thing is that Bless Mi Ultima has been censored and banned almost throughout the 40 years that it's been in print. We must always fight against censorship. These people that censor books are afraid, and so a kind of mass hysteria builds up, and they think that by getting rid of books, they will erase our history, our culture, our literature. And that's just not going to happen. We have made a promise to our ancestors to always keep our history alive, to let the young people know their history and art and literature. And that's why it's important that our books of the Latino community be in the curriculum in the schools. That's a bottom line, and we're not going to back away from that. That's always been true in this country, that every ethnic community has its art and history and literature in the curriculum. Why should we be different? We aren't. The Spanish language has been here over 400 years in Arizona and in this country. Native American languages have been here over 15,000 years. And so we have the right to be, to have our literature in the curriculum.
When you think about the fact that it's the year 2012, I mean, isn't it a different paradigm now, this notion of us and our books? I mean, this kind of a position feels like it's pushing us into that same paradigm.
That's interesting that you should bring up the idea of us and them. In my most recent novel, Randy Lopez Goes Home, I deal with that. And Randy Lopez asks himself, why is there always us and them? The other. And the fact is that seems to be a truism of life. As we hang on to our history and our culture, we get censored. And that creates that dialectic We didn't create it. All we want is inclusion. All we want is to be part of the American democracy. All we want is to have our young people read their history in the schools. It's part of the tension of living in this wonderful world, in this democracy, where we learn about all the other groups, all the other communities. I mean, I read all sorts of literature from other communities, and that makes me a better person. And that's what literature is all about, and we want our literature in there also.
So what's your sense as an author, as somebody who has lived, you know, you have such a full life, Rudolfo. What do you understand this fear to be all about?
What has developed in this country is a political ideology that is very narrow. It's narrow-minded, it's fearful, it believes that its way is the only way, and we in the Latino community have struggled against that thought, that kind of thinking, a long time. So it's not new to us. Our fathers and grandfathers struggled also. We keep wanting to educate people that we're not here to change the world. We're just here to be part of this country. The other part of this story is that I trust that there are very many good people in Arizona. I have always trusted the community itself, the community in Tucson, to fight against the censorship. I've been censored many times. Bless Mi Ultima has been censored. And my answer has always been the community itself, the community in Tucson, must realize that a few cannot censor books, that that's not right, and they will rise up against that, the censorship.
I'm wondering, Rudolfo, Bless Mi Ultima, now 40 years since you wrote it, 1972 was when it was published. So what's the difference between how people reacted to the book in the 1970s versus how people are reacting to it now, 40 years later? Is there a notable difference? Anything that stands out?
I'm just surprised that Bless Mi Ultima has been around, is still in print 40 years later. It's being read more than ever. It's a selection in the National Endowment for the Arts Big Read Program. And for me, the most gratifying part is the fact that it's being read more than ever. Censorship or the banning of Bless Mi Ultima, again, I think always occurs with very few people, a small group that gets together and wants to ban it. Sometimes it's just a family in the schools that objects to something. And again, so my answer has always been talk about it, discuss it with teachers, bring it up to the school board, and I always trust the community will do the right thing. And that's been true in every instance that Bless Mi Ultima has been banned. The students, the community has gone back and said, no, this book is important, as are all the books from our Latino community, our Native American community, and all the diversity, all the diverse communities in this country. We have a right to be there in the schools.
Let's talk about your new work, Randy Lopez Goes Home. It's really an allegory. It's a spiritual quest for Randy Lopez to return to his home in New Mexico and to return to his long-lost love. It sometimes reads like a kind of Hispano pilgrim's progress. So what kind of a mindset do you think readers should have when they approach this book that is really kind of, you know, the new returning home, the coming home story that a lot of Latinos are thinking about and living with?
Exactly. When I wrote Randy Lopez Goes Home, I had the character that returns to his small village in northern New Mexico. And his question is, who am I? I've gone out and I've lived in the Anglo-American society and mainstream society. I learned the language. I learned all the rules. But I lost something. And that's exactly what we were asking ourselves in the 1960s, you know. What have we lost if we assimilate completely? The beauty of this country is that it has always allowed communities to keep their ethnic identity. And so that's all we're asking, the Latino community is asking. You know, we're part of this country. We know the language. We know the culture and traditions and the literature. But let us keep a little part of ours also.
I'm fascinated by what you wrote at the end of your latest novel, dedicating it to your wife, Patricia, your wife of several decades. She passed away while you were writing the book in 2010. And you write in the afterword that she was the one who suggested that Randy Lopez's quest was as much for his home as it was for his long-lost love. So was this also a way of you coming to terms, if you can, a way of saying goodbye to your own love, to Patricia?
Well, that's true, and Randy Lopez Goes Home, the novel, works in various levels. One is, of course, I wrote it for my wife, and Randy Lopez goes in search of his love, who is Sophia. And of course, Sophia is wisdom, and that's what he's looking for. How can I acquire the wisdom of my ancestors? He keeps alluding all the time to the stories of his grandfather and his father and the community, and he realizes that there's wisdom there, and he's lost part of it, and that's his quest, to go back to his home country, to his little village, and make his identity whole again, complete.
Rodolfo, you continue to grapple with the contradictions between these two religious traditions that have deep roots in New Mexico. On the one hand, the Catholic Church and the Hispano tradition, and on the other hand, the ways of indigenous peoples. So now, with your perspective, Rodolfo, is there still this deep contradiction between these two sets of traditions? And can they be met? Can you be both? Or is what's happening now in New Mexico the hybrid, the new way?
The beauty of New Mexico is that we can incorporate the spirituality of all the groups here. Randy Lopez says, now is the time of the mestizo, that it's a coming together, it's a blending, and I don't see any contradiction at all in the spirituality that we enjoy here in New Mexico. I love the church, I love the Pueblo dances, I read a lot about the different religions, and they all become part of who I am. That's what Walt Whitman said, you know, a child went forth and everything he saw he became. And that's what we do here in New Mexico. We become that totality of spirituality.
Rodolfo, thank you so much for joining us on Latino USA.
Thank you.
Rodolfo Anaya is a professor emeritus in English at the University of New Mexico. His new book in stores now is Randy Lopez Goes Home. In a minute, Ovejeros Americanos, Immigrant Shepherds and Their Ties to the Land. That's coming up on Latino USA. No se vayan. Thank you. Welcome back to Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. As part of our ongoing series, Radio Nature, stories about Latinos connecting to nature in powerful ways, we take you now to Colorado, one of several states where guest workers from Latin America carry out one of the world's oldest and toughest professions, sheep herding. Andres Caballero has our story of an immigrant shepherd and his ties to the land.
In southwestern Colorado, the snow-covered peaks of the San Juan Mountains surround a valley that sits at almost 7,000 feet. Nearly 1,000 sheep chew on the dry grass of a meadow under the early afternoon sun. Several yards from the herd sits an old trailer, where a shepherd makes coffee and avoids the face-numbing wind.
Yo me llamo Heraclio Beltrán Dina.
My name is Heraclio Beltrán Dina. I'm from La Paz, Bolivia. I'm indigenous. I am Aymara.
In a few weeks, Beltrán will be sent to the High Plains Desert, where a busy birth season will double his herd. After that, he'll lead the sheep into the mountains, where he'll spend at least 2 months in complete isolation.
In the mountains, at first you wake up and smell the fresh air. All you hear is the sound of the crows, or the howls of the coyotes, or sometimes the bears. There is the river, the wind, the sound of the hail falling, the rain. That's how life is up there, and you just have to be behind the herd.
Beltrán may be a stranger in a strange land, but his deep connection to the natural world around him makes him feel right at home.
When I arrived here, I had a huge admiration for nature, the snow, the landscape, everything. It's different in Bolivia. It's hard for men to just say there is no God.
It was the lack of jobs in Bolivia that pushed him to come here. This is his sixth year working in Colorado. Beltrán walks all day behind his herd. The bells around the necks of his sheep make it easier to track them. Most of his days are long and boring. His hours are consumed by an endless quest for water and places to graze.
The only time you go to your trailer is to sleep. You start working at 5 a.m. and you're already walking. You go to sleep late, at around 9, 10. I would fall asleep while eating. I ate because I had to, or else I would have no strength.
Up here in the High Sierra, the sheep and a couple of sheepdogs are Beltrán's only company. They're like family. He talks to them as if they were people. When the sheep get injured, he tries to heal them. And when they get on his nerves, he swears at them. Before it gets dark, he whistles to his dog to guide the sheep to the place where they sleep. The man and his animals follow the same rhythm of the day. Beltrán's dark-weathered face reflects years of life outdoors. Below freezing temperatures in the winter and lightning storms in the summer make this job a lot harder. And then there's the danger. Beltrán is an intruder living in the home of bears, wolves, and mountain lions. He's already had one close call.
Ya conocía el monte donde estaba pasteando, pero no llevé rifle.
I knew the mountain where I was grazing my sheep, so I didn't take a rifle. They were grazing there, so I wandered off with my dog when I saw a bear. I didn't know what to do. The bear came towards me, trying to play. I screamed to scare it away, and that's when the dog started barking. So it got scared and it ran to the top of a hill.
But the toughest challenge of all this is the isolation. At night, when there's no more sheep to yell at or no more dogs to whistle to, that's when loneliness sets in.
A veces en el campo.
Let's be honest. Sometimes when I'm back in my trailer, I cry. There is a deep pain in your heart when you look at a picture of your family. They're so far away. I tell myself I never abandoned them. that I'm helping them live better. That gives me a little more strength to keep going. But there are moments when you cry alone.
Sometimes, he talks to a fellow Andean shepherd by phone. It lifts his spirits. They speak in Aymara. It helps them feel closer to home.
Sí, pues siempre el costo de vida sube, pero los sueldos de los trabajadores nunca suben, ¿no? Hay que seguir, hermano, como siempre, Sarmiento, yo siempre así con.
But what brings Beltrán the deepest solace is something much bigger than himself.
Hay una conexión a la Pachamama.
That's Mother Earth.
La Pachamama es como algo sagrado para los.
The Pachamama is sacred for the Aymara. It's like a god. In Bolivia, there's just a lot of respect for Mother Earth.
En Bolivia.
From the tiniest anthill to the vast open sky, Beltrán embraces the Pachamama.
Lo que respiras, la calor.
Nature's what you see, what you feel, the perfume of the mountains that you breathe, the heat that you feel, the wind, the aroma in the air.
El aroma que hay.
In 1 year, Heraclio Beltrán will finish his contract and return to his family in Bolivia. At least that's his plan. But he says that only God knows what will happen. Reporting from the high plains of Colorado for Latino USA, Andres Caballero.
A los campos, no te apartes del camino, que puedes pisar el sueño de los abuelos dormidos. Campesino, campesino, por ti canto, campesino.
And for this week, that's Latino USA. Our program is produced by Carolina Gonzalez, Tina Rubio, Andres Caballero, Mincho Jacob, and we had help this week from Neil Rausch. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Join me again next week for another edition of NPR's Latino USA.
Unos son tierra menuda, otros la raíz del trigo, otros son piedras dispersas en la orillita del río. Campesino, campesino, por ti canto, campesino.
Funding for our series, Radio Nature, is provided by the REI Foundation, supporting today's youth to develop a lifetime commitment to nature and the outdoors. Additional support for Latino USA is provided in part by the Marguerite Casey Foundation, supporting families, leading change.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information at macfound.org. And the Poetry Foundation, celebrating 100 years of Poetry Magazine, online at poetryfoundation.org. And the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, for 40 years working to improve health and healthcare, on the web at rwjf.org. This is NPR.